Welcome, everybody. Blessed are those that visit this channel and enjoy the content here.
One of the actual tournament runs I did want to ask about is one of your first big ones was this DreamHack Summer in 2013, where you guys made the run all the way to the semis. You had a close game against the core that became basically the Fnatic that won the major, if people remember, they were Epsilon, right? The cool thing I think on this angle as well to me, Maniac, is being someone from 1.6, I'm sure it is also cool to have an event like DreamHack is obviously like an iconic CS 1.6 tournament. Like, this is where everyone goes. Like, this is where SK and all those brilliant players, Neo and fucking Markolov and all these players have been there. So to make a run like this, even though, yeah, the scale's way smaller and it, like, now you would just go, it's just a fucking LAN, isn't it? Like, but I bet it was cool to have a run like this and have some success, right?
It was, I think it was very special and different for me compared to my teammates, because as you say, a part of me still was the 12, 13, 14 year old kid watching DreamHack, watching Neo, watching Get Right and Forest, and then suddenly I'm at an event and I'm part of it, playing the goddamn event. I'm there, I'm playing DreamHack. I'm in these walls, I'm in these halls that I have seen in frag movies with the music. The camera is just walking like Mind Track Land, going into like this 500 pieces and all. And I'm up there, and there's like a concert going on. It's like hardstyle music with lasers and all. I'm like, God, shit, I'm at DreamHack. This is DreamHack. Like, it's not really Counter-Strike related, but just an anecdote.
No, people don't know how cool the culture seemed like when we're all nerds. Yeah, of course.
And this is my first time in Sweden, right? So we fly to Sweden and we rent a car. So we fly to Stockholm, Skavsten, and you have to drive down to Jönköping, which is two to three hours. And so I'm driving because I'm the only one with the license. And I'm driving down and we're driving past these fjords, right, with the mountains and the lake. And I'm like, it's so eerie. Also, it's summer, so the sun sets really, really late. It's like 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, and it's still sort of day outside. That's Scandinavia. They have different circadian rhythm because of how where they are in latitude. And I remember, this is such a fucked up anecdote, but that's true. We arrived in Jönköping, and then we went to a restaurant, and they were celebrating on that very day the end of the exams for like getting into university or something. Like, there was a day for like a sort of exam, and everybody was dressed like as a sailor.
Oh, yes, they have that strange outfit they wear, don't they?
Came out this like ship, and they were dressed as a sailor, and we were sitting on this like terrace with the water. And I think I fell in love with like 50 women passing by next to me.
God, they're all beautiful as fuck as well.
And I was just like,
it's all just blondes.
Where am I? Like, this, surely this is paradise. True. Like, we have to move to Sweden. That's sort of my, it just hit me in the face, and I was like, oh my God. This is what life was supposed to be. Obviously, that was just a moment, but it just hit me in the face. Like, this is Sweden. This is Scandinavia. Like, oh my God. But the event, of course, was great. And for me, it took me a little bit of time in Go to get fully familiar and comfortable with the icons that I used to consider at the time. Like, you know, first time you joke around with Get Right, and he's super nice. Like, Chris is a friend of mine now. But the first time I'm looking at him and I'm like, that's Get Right. That's Get Right. Like, oh, that's Heaton. I know this guy. That's Neo. Holy shit. Yeah, that was weird. So you can imagine my feeling when at the first major, we eliminate Pasha and Neo from making it to the playoffs. Like, in my mind, I've just beaten my idols.
Right.
And I'm just, it's a memory that I will never, ever forget. It the meaning of it is so different because of who they were to me. I mean, obviously, they still were at the time, but who they were to me as a kid is just something completely different. And suddenly I'm part of it. I'm a professional player in Go, and all of these legends are here too. And we're sort of equals the time of an event.
One of the interesting things is you told the story earlier, but that actually makes a lot of sense. Now, I wondered why the orgs changed around that time later that year. But obviously, as you say, the team blew up and then you just reformed it for the first major, because obviously everyone wanted to play at the first major. It was like the money was crazy compared to before. When you remade this team, so obviously it was called Recursive at the first major, if people don't know, but it's basically the same core of players. If you've got Kenny S, Happy Apex, etc., right? When you made this team, as you say, this is actually, by the way, one of the, like, the sleeper runs of this major, because the problem people don't know is, like, you were in a group where actually on paper this is supposed to be like one of the groups of death. You were in the group that had NIP, so like top two team in the world. You had Universal Soldiers, was the guys who became Virtus Pro, the same lineup, so we already knew they were going to be good one day. And then I Buy Power was actually at this point in time like a good squad, and people know it wasn't that long after this they beat like a bunch of fucking European teams when it was in America. So like, to get out of this group's already legit, and then your problem just was in the playoffs you just ran into the team that won the tournament, Fnatic. Yep. But even then you won a map. Like, this were all close games. games against Nip was close. Like, this actually was like a very competitive major. Like, in this scenario, by the way, if that's the story that the team had kind of like actually been broken up, was it kind of a surprise to you how this major went? It seems like everything went awesome.
Yeah, it was close to being like a Hollywood sort of movie type scenario. So like, for context, I will add to that as well, that in the qualifier, in the run-up to the event, there was like open qualifier on LAN. We almost got disqualified from the qualifier because Uzi's demo crashed during a game. And some teams asked for our demo, and Uzi did not have a demo because he crashed after, like, I don't know, round 13 or 14 or something like that. And so he didn't have the demo. The file was corrupt. And so the admins eliminated us from the running to qualify for the event. And I spent, I still remember this day as if I was in there right now, I spent 2 hours arguing with them on chat. I don't even know what we were using at the time, probably Twitter or whatever platform we were using. I spent 2 hours talking to them, explaining to them, listen, Uzi had like 10 kills this entire series. Why? Obviously, he's not shitting. This is very obvious.
He wasn't even vaguely a star player, right? That's the weirdest part about it, right? Yeah, exactly.
And it's not even a dig against him, but specific series was crazy because he played a bad series, but they were trying to find a loophole to disqualify us. Right. You know, it was very under the belt at the time. Like, whatever you could do to fuck your team up, you would do it. And so I spent 2 hours with this admin saying, listen, obviously he was not cheating. This is a technical issue. We're not trying to hide something. We're not trying to hide the aimbot that he had. And after 2 hours, they allowed us to go through. And then we beat Maus, the German Maus, to qualify for the major. So already it was kind of a crazy story just to make it to the major. And then we lose against NIP the first game. Oh, yes, we lose against NIP. Then I think we beat iBuyPower because we end up in a decider game. So we must have beaten iBuyPower. And then we play against Universal Soldier on Inferno. And we lose 12-3 on the first half. So we're down 12-3 on the T side. We're getting destroyed, basically getting destroyed. Like, and we win 13-1 on the CT side. And I had one of the best halves of my life in that game. You can go and watch back the demo. I aced in the pistol round. So when we down 12-3, I aced from pit because I used to play pit position at the time. Aced in the pistol round, 4K in the first gun round, 3K in the third gun round, and I basically finished with like 28 kills. And we beat them on the CT side of Inferno. We got back and we won them. And there are still images out there from the French community of us winning this moment. And I'm crying. And these are genuine tears. Like, these are very genuine tears for me. Like, I'm actually crying from making this comeback and beating them. Because then it meant... how it was working at the time was that a legend spot would guarantee your participation to the next event.
Oh, yes, right. Okay.
But this meant...
So you sort of earned a career then. You're like, we're going to be someone then. Okay.
Exactly. Right. It was transforming for us, and not that there wasn't even any sticker at the time, so it wasn't just financial, but it was just the idea that, hey, this game, this comeback that we just made, which by the way was best of one, you have to realize, like, life-changing event at the best of one, this game just guaranteed us to play the next major, which was then going to be EMS One Katowice 2014. So at this moment I realized we are going to be at the next major, and now we're qualified for the playoffs. And this was a very, very meaningful moment for me and my life. And by the way, Apex is not with us at the time. He's in Klamistik. We are playing with SF, GMX, Happy, and Kenny S. Yes, I want to say,
yeah,
I think Kenny.
Yeah, boss.
And that's when we beat Universal Soldier. And then you're talking about in quarterfinal, we lose to the core that was going to get then be Fnatic. Oh, no, it is Fnatic.
No, it is Fnatic by now. Fnatic. Yes.
And it's a very hard loss because we do so great on the T side of Train, which is the last map, and we completely crumble on the CT side. They mess us up on the CT side when we are CT on Train, which is very sad because I thought we had done enough on the T side. And this is where people have to understand the reason why I can be relevant at the desk and I can empathize with a lot of players is because I myself have lived a lot of these situations. So this loss against Fnatic was a very good example for me to realize that I thought we had won after the first half. And that was a deadly mistake. I thought, oh, we've done it. Like, we've got 6 rounds on the T side of Train. Oh my God, what a good T side. We're going to win. And then obviously, if you think like that, there's a very good chance you're not going to win. And we lost on the CT side. But it was a very heartfelt loss. And also for the anecdote, Duncan, I've made playoffs 3 times in my life in majors. And I have only ever lost to the champions.
Yes. True.
That's an underrated fact. I've only ever lost to whoever won the major. I've lost to Fnatic, I've lost to VP, and I've lost to NIP. These are the only teams that ever beat me in the playoffs. But again, I am very aware that my career was very humble at the very top, but these are some of the things that I keep with me, like close to myself as, hey, you know, we did something. It wasn't out of this world. It wasn't exceptional, but we did something. We did something good.
Yeah, I was actually going to ask, because obviously at the next major, the Katowice one, as you say, the real problem was, even though the team was really good, and this is when Apex is back in the light, the problem is, this is when, if people have to remember, this is when actually there'd been a shuffle. So now you've got Kaylee instead of Kenny S, and you've got Apex back in. But the thing is, this is the one where, like, even though LDRC is really good at this time, obviously after this, we're going to talk about like the really nice period where all the results go awesome. It's not just that you played VP, you played the Virtus Plow bit. Like, you actually had the one where, like, the joke is, it is over after the first half when you play this team, right? I've heard so many stories, but give me your take, because it looks like you were another one of the victims of, like, they just were unbeatable at this tournament, right?
They were unbeatable, and what is crazy is that prior to the event, we were beating them on practice. So there is famously an interview. There is a famous, not famous, but for me, a famous interview where we are actually saying to people, like, no, we've been beating VP, like, we're cool with them. Which is obviously goes down as a horrible statement because of how they were going to turn out, you know? Katowice, which is, it's crazy how life is. Can you imagine? It was 10 years ago and now I'm in Katowice doing this interview with you. I'm in Katowice in the same hotel.
Yes.
In the same hotel 10 years later. Anyway, back to the conversation. We were in the group stage. This is famously, this was like the double square setup. So there was two squares of teams, four, like a 4x4 and then another 4x4. And we were playing group stage in this little gymnasium, which is next to Spodek. And on the way to the playoffs, we do an incredible comeback as well against 3D Max, Pimps 3D Max, which we eliminate on the way. By the way, Jacob, shout out if you're watching.
Do you ever actually rib him with that? If I were you, I'd be doing it all the time. Do you ever mention that win?
I don't know. You know, Chad loves to talk about how he beats me. I'm more of like a silent guy. You know, it's I know what I did. Okay. I know what I did. Right. But if you poke me, I'll poke back.
Right. Okay.
We beat 3D Max on the way, qualifying for the decider. And then we play against VP in Spodek. For context, we're having a quarter of the venue. So at the time, League of Legends and StarCraft have the main part of the venue, and we have a quarter of the venue. It's like sort of a not a U-shape, but like a 90-degree angle scene. And we don't have a soundproof booth. We do not have sound like noise-canceling headset or very bad quality noise-canceling headset. And we are playing against VP, and every single kill that we get against us, probably 5,000 people roar. Every single frag that you get against you, you hear 5,000 people roar in your face. And they are 20 meters away from me. And there's no glass. I see them. They're right there. I can almost see them. So we play on Mirage and we get 15-0'd on the CT side of Mirage. That's how strong they were.
Fucking hell.
15-0, we are CT, they are T, and they are unplayable. Like,
that's so insane. That's actually bonkers to win 15-0.
It's a crazy... Yeah. On the T, and at the time, it was a pretty CT-sided map, right? It was a decently CT-sided map. It was not a good map for us. We knew it. We knew it was going to be rough. But they 15-0 us, and there is nothing we can do. Like, Bayali is swinging out of ramp every round with the Pup Flash, and he's killing two. Neo is lurking out middle. I never know where he is. I don't even know where Snacks is. Half the time, he kills me in my back. Pasha is just spraying us all the time. And people are screaming every round. So this was like almost like an out-of-body experience where if you ask me, I feel like I never played this quarterfinal.
Right. It never really happened.
Right. It never really happened. I just kind of witnessed myself getting destroyed. And then we obviously got eliminated in quarterfinal, which all in all was not a bad result. But I mean, the way we lost, holy hell, that was a poor game. If I'd worked the desk at that time, I would have said, okay, what am I going to say in this desk? Like, how am I going to talk about this game? Like, there was no game. Like, can we just get an asset? Can we get like an interview with someone or whatever? But yeah, so that is the quarterfinal in Katowice, getting absolutely plowed by VP, who, as history would show, were impossible to play. You know, they just destroyed everybody.
So after this, obviously, an interesting result was this is when the uptick happens because of the results. I mean, part of it, as you said before, is you're having bad luck. You get a bracket draw. If you get a bracket draw against the eventual champion in the round of eight, you don't get to be top four logically because they are the champion. But after this, when you went to Copenhagen Games, here's how I would describe it. Famously, your team beat Titan, right? Which was the one with Existence and MBK, right? Basically, the joke is actually one of my favorite lineups ever. You could actually argue this result killed that lineup. If people don't know,
maybe
losing that game is basically what made Shocks just be like, I'm not living in this game anymore. anymore. Fuck it, I'm off. And then the whole him forgetting yes. Like the joke is that's like the first domino that you push that all these French shuffles come from, right? This, by the way, the reason I bring this up is, again, even though look, it's still Copenhagen Games. You are just in like a LAN in Denmark. It's not like you're in fucking, you're not in like the stadium in Lanxess or whatever. But even so, Maniac, if you're coming from the like end of Source and these guys were in, at one point they were the number one team in the world. Like it's a big deal to get a win like this, right? It means something.
Yes, and also at the time, Copenhagen Games meant something. Like from the Source community to the beginning of CSGO, this was one of the rendezvous of the calendar. Like everyone was looking at Copenhagen Games in March, beginning of the year. It's going to be great. It was an important event for me. I mean, obviously, over time, it lost its prestige and it kind of disappeared. But I would say 2013, 14, 15, this was a legitimate event with all the best teams were going to. Like there was no, whoever won Copenhagen Games basically looked like the best team in the world. So yeah, we beat Very Games at the time. I'm not exactly sure if they are Titan already.
They were
Very Games.
They were
Titan. So we beat this lineup at the time. My first degree experience of this game was magical because I had an extremely strong game personally. I played really well. I think I might have topped the stats for this game. So my first feeling when I beat them is an incredible feeling. It's like, you know, finally beating your hero, like finally breaking through the glass ceiling. Like we came so many times close to beating Very Games, we could never really do it, and finally we do it. So my first degree experience is elation, and I cannot believe my eyes. Like I'm like hugging existence when we beat them, which by the way is super selfish because he's probably pissed as fuck.
Oh, sure,
but I'm
yes,
just like
sure.
In the moment I'm just like, oh my god, this is incredible what we've done. Unfortunately, retroactively, it's one of these games where if Caddy was cheating, holy fuck, he probably used
did
that
it
in that game.
Right.
Because and the reason I mentioned that is because the Katowice result that we were touching on before, Kaylee was the lowest rated player of the entire event. I can guarantee you he was not cheating at the time, or he is the worst cheater that's ever been existed in the game. So I know in Katowice what we did was us, and in fact, probably four of us. I know that. In Copenhagen Games, against Very Games, or against Titan, there are a few moments where, ooh. And at the time, I had no idea.
No,
I'm just
of course.
I'm he's sitting next to me. I'm like, what the? Whoa. Okay, let's go. Like, high five. Let's go. And now when I look back and I look at what he done in that game, that throws like a sort of veil.
You've got to at least ask, right? Yeah, you've got to wonder.
Exactly. You wonder like, hey, what if he actually did in that game? What would that mean? Would we have beaten them? Like, it's one of the greatest victory of my little career in the game. And I'm like, now it's tainted, right? But at least individually, this was one of the moments where I stepped up. I had a really strong game, and I keep that as a fond memory to beat Titan in Copenhagen Games.
Because after this is when basically, I mean, we'll get to why it breaks up later, but this run now, like I actually think if you track from this tournament onwards, your team is like a top five team in the world. Maybe even better than that if you go look, because as you say, it's only the teams that win the event that's beating you. Because after this, you have that DreamHack Valencia event where you guys win, and it's like, look, this is obviously an event that not all the top teams go, but I will remind people, like, they had, like, the Hellraisers team with Dorsey and people like that. They obviously had Shox's Epsilon team, like, where he was, like, one of the best players in the world. Like, again, like, this is one of these events where it's more like a medium-sized event, I would say, than, like, the big, big one. But when you win these events, what it's showing is, like, what we're talking about, only the absolute best teams can beat your side at the time. Like, this team's actually at a high, high level, right?
We were on the upwards trajectory. We were playing better and better Counter-Strike. On a personal level, DreamHack Valencia was a very complicated event because it is the year where I started having again my panic attacks. I've been struggling with anxiety almost my whole life. I'm really better at it now. I've had very blissful years the last, I would say, 3 years, something like that.
Did it ever happen like when you play?
Yes.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah. I've had panic attacks while I was playing. In fact, I had a very strong panic attack on the last round against NIP in Cologne, where I felt like I couldn't breathe.
Okay.
But this is my this.
The reason I'm shocked by that, though, Maniac, is if people don't know, like sort of something I've had in a long time, but I had a period in my life where I had something akin to that, either anxiety or panic. And what I can tell you is the strangest thing for me is why I can't imagine having it during a game. Is when people hear panic, they just think, "Oh, you're just scared." No, I would have that thing where called derealization, where I would essentially feel, Maniac, like I was almost spectating my life, but it wasn't real. I think so. Yeah, I don't know about you, but what. Like, how do you even play if something like that? If you're getting gripped by this feeling, what do?
You just get by. You just get by. Like, I started having, I had panic attacks the first time when I was 19. That was my encounter with, like, what people would basically describe as an almost heart attack. Like, it's very, panic attacks can sometimes look like very similar symptoms to a heart attack, which obviously it isn't, but it can be very similar, which is like, you know, a feeling of losing like numbness in the arm, pressure in the chest, short breath, that kind of stuff. I had that the first time when I was 19. And then it came around again in Valencia, because that was a time of my life that was very key. That was a crossroad where I had to choose between esports, and I had a job offer from a very, very important private firm in Switzerland that I declined at the time. So it was a very stressful time in my life. And I started having panic attacks in Valencia for the first time in what was a few years, and it stayed with me for a few months. So it was really rough. It was extremely rough. I don't have a good memory myself. These are memories of uneasiness and tension and stress. And these were not good times. I don't feel like I experienced these moments fully and completely. Like, I remember, I mean, when we beat, of course, when we beat VP to make it to the semi in Cologne, right? This is an incredible moment, and I will never forget Katie jumping with the USP and killing Pasha, and we win the round, and it's great. I keep that moment with me, but it's kind of tainted, and the whole period is tainted because it was a really rough period for me individually.
Right.
Very, very, very complicated. And probably part of the reason why I struggled to perform for quite a while, because I was dealing with my own demons. So it was rough. I don't have regrets, and I don't want to go back in time and relive things, but I wish I could experience them again exactly as they were, but as I am now. If I could just go back and relive
just
it.
Without the emotion that clouded it.
Exactly, yeah. I don't want to change the outcome. Like, of course, I wish we could have beaten NIP instead of losing 16-14 the last. Of course, I wish that. But I don't want to go back and rewrite history. I am at peace with what happened. I just wish I could go back and experience it once again, being who I am today, which is like way more at peace and capable of dealing with these demons. At the time, I was younger, and it was harder.
As you say, after this was the major run, which was a really big one, because you guys go to the semis and very, very narrowly lose to NIP, right? Mm. What I want to ask is this. It feels like this major, I mean, even without knowing what you're saying there, must have been such a crazy roller coaster. Because on the one hand, in the quarters, you actually finally beat this first pro team that's been like the main thorn in your side. You get the big win. So you go from the high of that to in the semis. Like, actually, this is a very winnable NIP. They're looking a bit wounded, and it's a super close game. People like Apex are having awesome matches. I mean, the saddest thing as well, if no one's ever been back, like, I put it this way, I don't even joke about this match to Apex, because it's so cruel the way this game ends. I think they even just rush him in the fucking drop down or something, mate. You know, some like nightmare fuel way to lose a game on cobblestone. Yeah. Like, and basically it's like one of the least satisfying ends to a match if you're an LDLC player, and I imagine you could ever have, because when you see that, you think to yourself, like, maybe we win the major if we win this game, right?
Yeah.
The up and down must have been crazy at this event. Give me some thoughts.
Yeah, it was a little bit all over the place mentally. I still remember leaving the venue after losing to NIP, and I didn't even know. Like, weirdly enough, I think a part of me was glad it was over, because it was so intense, like the end of that game, and I was so in such a bad place. But I think looking back, we were all very proud of what we'd been able to do, because, you know, we beat VP, as you say, who was supposed to be leagues ahead of us, and we actually beat them. And then we really hold a candle to NIP. And I personally think if we go to the grand final, we can win it. Obviously, there is the obvious circle back to, hey, what was Dear Kaylee doing at the time? And this is always going to be here. And no matter how I try to work my way around it mentally, it will always be there. But if you go
by the
back
way,
time,
one thing I definitely can actually like relate to you guys on that is, like, the worst thing about that stupid cheating bullshit is he might not even have done it, but now it's tainted every cool win that he was involved in, right? Because anytime he did something good in the match, you have to think, oh, fuck, was that? Did he press the button or did he do? That's the worst part. It's actually not knowing it's the worst part. It's not even that he did the cheating.
That's exactly that. There is no way of knowing. There is literally no way of knowing. I mean, it was. I don't know. I honestly, it's one of these, you know, we always say, like, to move on from something, you need closure and you need to have, you need to find your answers and all. For me, this was a learning experience where I will not get closure, and this is a form of closure. Like, I will never know, and I have to come to peace with that fact.
You just have to accept it, right?
Exactly. I just have to accept that I will never be in possession of all the information, and I have to live with the idea that it is possible. And that doesn't take away anything from what I have experienced in this game myself. So it doesn't need to hurt me as a person. Sure, it can hurt my career and the titles that I have, because I won titles with him. but it can never take away from what I did. And this is my way of dealing with it. It's like, I have lived through these moments. I've done my share. This is my experience. It's my life. But yeah, you're right. There is the whole situation. I mean, look, if we jump in time, the first LAN event that we have with Titan, with Kaylee and Kenny S, we fuck everybody up. Yep. We destroy everybody. I win games against Fnatic and LDS, you know, and I have 9 kills. And it's just literally double sniper on Dust2, Kenny S on car, or no, Kenny S middle, Kaylee on car, double AWP, 16-1. Yeah, cool. It's like, I guess we're the best team in the world right now. What am I supposed to do? What am I supposed to do? Like, we are just beating everybody. And this is absolutely freaking tragic.
Because, by the way, back on the topic of that Cologne major, though, like, yeah. The problem is, I know, like, people don't want to do the what if, because first of all, you sound like a loser, because it's like, oh, but I could have done this. But like I say, it was very plausible to win this major. By the looks of the matches, it could have happened.
I mean, if we beat NIP, if it's 16-14 instead of 14-16 in the last map, and then you send us against Fnatic, I believe, in the grand final, I think we could beat them. There is no reason why we couldn't beat them. There is literally no... We had beaten VP... We had beaten NIP in this theoretical world. There's no reason why we cannot beat Fnatic. And then this could be the first major Apex can get an MVP, because he would have been the MVP.
Yeah, he would.
Undeniable MVP of the major then. So yeah, I agree with you. I think the what if game is dangerous if you actually get lost in it and you lose track of what really happened. But as a mental exercise, I am convinced that we would have had a shot in the grand final.
Right, with that one. Right, obviously, after ESL One Cologne, we come to, funnily enough, it's actually the first French shuffle as it is dubbed, even though if people don't know, the joke is that's just like what happens in the French scene and what's even the case in other games like Source. But this is when CS, because obviously the big French teams now like yours had risen up to join the Very Games Titan. If people don't know, basically at that point in time, I know it sounds bizarre now because it sounds so alien, but back then you could actually sometimes have like top 10, top 12 teams would be French. Like, and these were real French lineups. So the first French shuffle, here's what we have to nail here, Maniac, is because people look at the big names and they think like a HLTV forum user, what their super team would be. As far as I know, everyone in history has this French shuffle wrong. Because here's how they tell the story. They go, okay, so what you had was, you had the other guys left Titan, so MBK went, and he went with Shox, and they were going to make like their own super team, obviously eventually became Mercenary, which became LDLC, later on Envious, and then the story goes, this is what people think, that the reason why MBK left is because Existence was going to kick Smiths, and then I think at the time also, let me think, they still had Kenny S. They were keeping Kenny S. And then the story goes, people think that they came and said, oh, right. But if you go and look at like teams like in the past, Clan Mystic, and then now obviously some of these other squads, Epsilon, LDLC, people think it's like, right, what they did was they said, right, give me Apex and Kaylee. They are the sick ones. And then it was like, oh, wait, MBK's left because he didn't like Smiths. Well, in that case, fuck it. Just get Maniac as the fifth. I've heard that is literally ass backwards. And it was actually you that Maniac, that Existence wanted. You were going to go with Existence, maybe you and Apex as well. And it was actually like Kaylee or Apex. One of the other two was the afterthought, right? Give me some thought. What was it from your perspective? How did this move come? Because you were right in the center of this Game of Thrones-esque move, right?
Right, right. It was very movementful. So the way it came about for me was I got a call from Niak, Jerome, who used to be the manager of Titan at the time. And he basically said that they were about to go through changes, that they were going to remove some players. And I honestly, at this point, cannot even remember who was on the team. Shox was probably on it, NBK.
No, Shox had already left at this point in time. It was NBK, Smith.
NBK, Smith, and would it be Scream?
Scream at the time still, yes, but he was exactly. Going to leave at that point, yeah.
So they were gonna make changes, and they wanted, at the time, Apex and myself, for sure.
Right. Like,
that was the duo they wanted. I know that Kevin wanted, or Existence wanted to work with me, wanted to play with me. We had never played before together, aside from that little test in Source that I mentioned. And he wanted Apex as well because of all the ideas he had and like sort of the energy he had. And then the question was, okay, so who do we pick as a fifth, right? Like, what do we do? And that's when we came to this idea, like, hey, let's try to have this double sniper, right? I think it was relatively new and avant-garde at the time. There's not a lot of people who played with pure double snipers. We knew that Kaylee could also rifle a little bit on the side, so Kenny would be the primary for sure, and then Kaylee would be like the second picking up. But that's basically how it came about. And I think if you look at how we were doing with LDLC and the trajectory we were on at the time, I think you could make a case that we made the wrong decision. I think there's a case that's got legs to stand on. If you say that, because we were on the up and up with LDLC, right? You mentioned that we won Valencia.
Oh, you mean doing this whole move was wrong. LDLC should have just stayed together as a five, basically.
We could have stayed together as a five. Right. If you consider like how the trajectory that we were on with LDLC, the Valencia win, Copenhagen result, a major result. But I have to admit that personally, when I got the call, the prospect of working with Existence was something that I had wanted for many years at this point. And it was just, I thought that with Kenny being Kenny and with Existence as a leader, I thought like our ceiling is going to be much higher than it ever going to be with LDLC. Like we're doing good right now with LDLC, arguably we're even peaking, but I imagine our ceiling is going to be much higher because Kenny S is the best sniper in the world. Maybe even in 2014, there maybe is a case for the best player in the world for a few months. And Existence is a leader that had already, at the time, his credit was through the roof. Like, he was an incredible leader, only falling short to NIP. So I thought, you know what? Fuck it, let's do it. Like, let's join Titan with Kaylee and Apex. And that would be probably July or August 2014. That's when we make the move.
When you joined this team, as you said, you were one of the people they actually were headhunting. Was the perception, do you think, because if people don't know how the Titan Very Game squad works, as far as I know, one of the reasons why NBK has held that candle, he must be the IGL for so long, is because he was kind of like second in command in a lot of his teams. Like I've heard he sort of like worked with Existence, then he worked with Happy, and so his logic was like, I've sort of seen the role, I've done it from, it's like being an assistant manager in football, eventually you're going to want the gig yourself, right? Was the perception, since NBK is leaving, you're going to kind of take that role, or was there any sense that you'll be part of the structure?
Yes, I think it was the idea from the get-go, and that's how it turned out. When I was playing, I was always a very vocal player in terms of what we should do, how we should prepare a game, the decisions mid-round, because I was a lurk on the T side. Well, lurk by today's term, but I was playing the extremities of the map on the T side, and I was playing small bomb sites, anchoring on the CT side. And so basically the way it would work, be Existence, and he would have Apex and me sort of underneath him for like ideas and calls. And Apex would be more in the pack, and I would be more on the side. And we would come in with input. I would tell him, for example, I was one of the first ones to really do consistently at the time to count the smokes that are happening on my area.
Right.
To tell him, like, hey, listen, like in 15 seconds, they don't have any smokes here. So if you want to fake your spot and you want to send back to me, you can do it. And I think this is where we found sort of a rhythm to work, where he knew I would feed him information on who am I hearing? Where are they? What's the utility left? What have they been doing? How have they been playing? And then sort of relay him the info, and then he would make calls. And also, of course, when you play these types of position, every now and then I would hit him with like an actual plan from A to Z. Like, listen, Kevin, this is what we do next round. Like, give me one smoke, two puff flashes. We can find this timing. He's always playing here. So I think this was always the idea. And I think at the time as well, I had the reputation of being a player that was very easy to work with, that I had a very good mentality. I was very well equipped as well to deal with any kind of personal issues that we would have. So sort of like a mediator almost, like when there's troubles, and sort of to gel people together. And I think this was a pretty good argument for my case as well. I think they had Titan, as in Titan before we joined, had their fair amount of sort of interpersonal issues here and there. Sure. And they probably relished the idea of, hey, let's bring someone who's a little bit more mature and with whom it's easy to work with. And I think this was also part of the reasons why they wanted me.
So you actually referenced it earlier, but obviously the first event for this team was a fucking banger. Like, look, we'll leave the whole Kaylee topic aside, so I feel like we can get to that, but it'll just blur all the results. Because as you've said in the past, we'll never know. Unfortunately, we can never know which games he did and didn't. Like, it isn't just as simple as he was good in this one, he wasn't in that one. So who knows? But this event, if people don't know, was this DreamHack Invitational in Stockholm. And if people don't know, they had all the best teams here. Like, NIP's there, Fnatic's there, who, by the way, is about to become like the best team ever, maybe. You had obviously the LDLC team, which eventually would become LVS. Look, at the time, I believe this is when they still had like Shocks or NBK and IGLing, so it wasn't quite the same one that won the major, but it's the same lineup. And on paper, your team's probably supposed to be maybe the third team here, maybe even fourth. Who knows? There's NIP, there's a bunch of squads out there, there's the Danes. But actually, your team shocks the world, wins the event, beats all these teams. I mean, the Fnatic one, there was some shenanigans, if you remember, like two of them didn't arrive until like 1 minute before the game or something. They were in like traffic and we were all waiting. And then, but at the same time, if people don't remember, that's the game where like there's like a fucking 15-0 or something. And then like the joke is the one round they win is JW does that like impossible like ace with no scope, if you remember, which like you see absolutely rock them in the final two. True, it was the one with insane like delays and all of like the clips of like Smiths and Shocks dancing on stream, like because it was like 2 hour delays or whatever. But if people remember, this is like again like a slightly convincing win, like outplaying these guys and this whole double sniper thing in this whole region. Whenever it would get rolling, I get that it's like a high maintenance thing. When it got rolling, it was really deadly, mate. I mean, like you said, people haven't played against it. So give me some thoughts on this event. This has to be like, if you want to talk about like a fucking honeymoon phase, it's like a dream to come to an event like this, right?
Yeah, it was kind of incredible. I still remember getting to the hotel in Stockholm and like sitting down with Existence the first night and sort of, I don't think we had a whole lot of practice before rolling into the event. Like probably a few weeks, we were just trying to figure out how we want to play the game and our positions. But we went there with very moderate sort of expectations of what we were going to do and how we were going to play. And then as we started playing, we realized, holy shit, like it's clicking. And the double sniper was really something that was, I mean, when you had Kaylee and Kenny S, and as you said, we're going to leave the Kaylee topic in parentheses for now, but literally anytime we would get rolling financially, like there were maps where nobody could touch us. Like Dust 2 was I'm sure there are more than five official Dust 2 games on record where we have 16-1 or 16-2, like very high caliber teams.
Sure.
Because the CT side got to a point where you would have, as I said, Kenny would be B ramp and Kaylee would be on the car with AWP and I wasn't playable. And life was very, very easy because on top of that, you had Apex who was still very, very efficient. Like it's very skilled at the time. It's late 2014. So you have Apex who's running like a wild dog. You have Kenny who's hitting everything. Kaylee as well doing the same thing. Existence is leading. And I'm basically just cleaning up rounds. Like I think the game that you refers to against Fnatic, I probably finished with like 8 kills or 9 kills and we were 16-1. Like it's just, the game is very easy. The game is very comfortable. I don't really see a lot of people. And this was a very euphoric start of the team as we put it together. And I'm going to be honest as well, in practice, even before and after that, we were messing everybody up. We were destroying in practice. Fnatic or no Fnatic, doesn't matter. We were rocking everybody. And what's even worse than that is a little bit after this event, the ban wave started happening, right? So some players started getting banned. It came in, I don't know if it was a week or over 2 weeks or the span of 2 weeks. And Kaylee became, for a moment, really bad in practice. Like, I remember he was really bad. So I don't know, whatever was happening, either mentally or whatever. And we would still rock everybody up in practice. Like, we were almost playing 4v5, but we had, like, such momentum and we were playing with such confidence that we were still destroying everyone. So that was a very short-lived but very intense honeymoon period we had with this Titan roster, which, honestly, I felt at this very moment, which is September, October, probably borderline, I felt like we were the best team in the world. At this moment in time, this snapshot in history, we could have played anybody. I wasn't scared of anybody.
Yeah, if people don't know, like I say, is there, you had this event in Stockholm that you rocked. Obviously, ASWC, famously, the joke is you guys basically got Fifth Laren fired. Like, you just rocked them so hard at that fucking tournament. Like, that was the event where, like, he was fired after that, even though you had to say he retired at the time. There was obviously stuff like you beat the LDLC team at the ASWC qualifier before that, even though they beat you in the main event. Like, even if the team could lose, I see what you mean. I always thought back then this was the ultimate dark horse team. Like, it was streaky, but I tell you what, when it was on fire, as you can imagine, it was really, like, it hit super fucking hard. Like, people have to remember, after this, when RPK came back, but he was obviously like barely played the game. That was when Kenny S was in God mode and they still could almost beat the top team. So you can imagine with Kaylee, whatever he was doing, putting up big numbers. Like you say, if people imagine back when Apex was really good, if Apex has to be your third best player, you can have a pretty fucking good team back then. Like, that's the formula to win. So what I want to ask is this, obviously the worst thing about this team is it didn't get that many lands. So it will always be kind of a what if, not if just even the Kaylee angle, but like, you weren't allowed to play the major famously because they bizarrely took this decision I've never understood to this day, mate, which goes like this. They didn't just say Kaylee was vacked, so he can't play the major. Well, at the time, they did have a qualifier for the major, people don't. In fact, they did a qualifier for this spot famously. It's the one that like fucking Copenhagen Wolves or something won and got in instead. So at the time, I remember saying, I actually said this to the Valve devs in person at the LAN when they talked to a bunch of the talent. I said, what I don't understand is why punish the rest of the team though? Like logically in that scenario, they're already handicapped Chapman. They've just lost like the second best player. I said, why not just let them take another player? Could have been Scream or something like that at the time. Let them take another player, just play the online qualifier. If they qualify fair and square, you just let them play. And if anything, you're actually sending a message sort of like, we don't let players cheat, but we won't sort of like fuck the whole team. Because the weird thing is, Maniac, I'll just tell you straight up, I know cheating was less famous back then. It hadn't been exposed to the same degree. But this might shock you, but the Valve devs straight up told me they actually were, this is why I'm famously made, it was actually one of my first story and thoughts videos ever, by the way. It has one of the most views on my channel. It's just like about cheating. And I have a famous section where I say, like, do you actually think that, like, when they're playing, the cheat he's using is the old 1.6 one with like a fucking girder sticking out the guy so it sticks through the wall? Like, because they actually implied that, well, he must have known they were cheating. As if, like, as I say, you're all looking down the line at the boot camp and he's got like wireframe walls and he's just like, ah, there's no one here, no one here, guys. Like, whereas, as you say, first of all, this team's attending real tournaments, Valve devs, with all fucking admins behind you. Secondly, they've got all demos we can break down. And also, I'll add this in there finally. In the French scene, there were those people who, for obvious reasons, did think maybe there's something about Kaylee. But actually, there wasn't the same kind of fanfare that later there was about the Flusher and fucking all, and some of the Luminosity players. Like, actually, they had way more fanfare, people certainly, but it's obvious. So, like, that's the thing that always burns me a bit, mate. It's like, if you'd have gone to the major and lost, yeah, obviously you can't cry and go, well, I want to use a cheating player. But the idea you're basically told, you're disqualified too. You're not allowed to play this major. How did you take that? Because at the time, again, you guys were in a team house and you were all boot camping, right? So must have been a big shock to know it's all for nothing.
It was a very tough moment, emotionally speaking. A tremendous amount of frustration and feeling helpless and feeling like nobody wants to talk to you at Valve. No one is giving you any answer. Basically, there's no dialogue. There's no discussion. There's like a unilateral decision that's been made and you can do nothing about it. For the context, that's a kind of a crazy sort of anecdote. But at the time, when I'm in Titan, right, I'm studying my master's degree in psychology at school, so that takes me a few hours a week. And I'm also working, I'm basically doing an internship as a work consultant for a private company. So I'm basically doing 100-hour work
per week. Okay.
Yeah, no, that's crazy. No, I'm studying, I'm being an intern, and I'm playing at the same time. I don't think it's healthy. I wouldn't recommend anyone to do it, but that's what I did at the time. So the story goes like this. I was having a seminar, so we were doing like a workforce development seminar for a company, big company in Switzerland. And I was driving back on my way home. I was about to go to the boot camp in Brussels. So we were preparing for the major boot camp in Belgium. And then as I parked my car in front of the building we were living at the time, I saw that I had like 8 or 10 missed calls from Niag, the manager. And so at this point in time, there's two thoughts in my head. Either one is I'm kicked.
Yeah, that's the obvious reason. One like, actually to think. Yeah, exactly.
Like, that's the end, right? If your manager tries to call 7 times, like, Either I'm kicked or something really bad just happened.
Or the team's broke or something and something like that.
Like, exactly. I knew some bad news happened. I had this like spidal, like tingling sense that holy shit, like something is going down. Otherwise, he would never spam me with calls. So I opened HLTV. The first thing I did is open HLTV as kind of a reflex. And I saw the headline, Kaylee Vagban. That was like the headline of the news. And I remember thinking, wow, like, that must have been a bug, right? Or he must have
just an accident. You initially assumed innocence, right?
Absolutely. I thought, wow. I mean, either that's a bug or someone hacked his account, got him to. Because for the story, when I was in Titan once, I got my Steam account hacked. Like it happened once.
Oh, right.
Someone talked to me and pretended to be a friend of mine. I clicked on the link like an idiot. And then suddenly my PC just went fucking on and off, started fucking, you know, blinking and all. And I knew it was over.
Yeah.
So that happened to me once. And I saw this headline and I'm like, oh shit, like Kaylee got hacked. Like, oh, I hope we can handle it. And so I call Jerome back and I asked him, like, that's a joke, right? And then I still remember his tone where he told me that, no, that's not a joke. And he had the somberest, most dark tone possible in his voice. And this is when he explained to me what had happened, how Kaylee literally got vagban at the boot camp because they were already in Belgium.
Oh, yes.
I was on my way to Belgium. And he basically got vagban on site, pretty much took his stuff up and leave the house immediately. Not talking to anyone, not saying anything, just pretty much left. Which to me was an extreme admission of guilt at the time.
Like, I think, not even an excuse. Yeah, he just left.
Yeah, because if that was going to happen to me, like if, for example, if tomorrow I open my Steam account and I'm vagban, my first reaction would be, what the fuck is this shit?
Yes.
Like, oh, why am I banned? What's going on? And you would scream around trying to get it fixed.
Yes.
But this whole like up and leave was screaming guilt for me. But anyway, so that's the context of me hearing the news. And so what I do is I forward my flight. I was supposed to fly 2 or 3 days later, but I fly immediately to Belgium so I can be with the team. And this whole time, I am thinking we're gonna pick up a fifth player and we're gonna go to the major anyway.
Yeah.
I'm thinking we're gonna go to the major anyway. I'm thinking Kelly's gonna get banned. Well, go to hell. We're gonna get a fifth player. We're gonna go to the major, because you also have to remember the way the seeds were organized at the time was you had top seed, high seed, mid seed, low seed, depending on where you were coming into the tournament. And because the core of LDLC in Cologne, we finished top three, semifinal top four. Yeah. We had a top seed, so we were gonna roll in like an easy group, so to speak, and we would have a bunch of advantages and perks for being a top seed. So I was thinking, well, it's not ideal. We're gonna pick somebody up and we're gonna do our best and let's see what can happen. You know, we're gonna build based off of that. And then I heard that we're not allowed. First of all, we are removed from the competition, which like the first news is okay. Well, it kind of sucks. Like I had a top seed, but even though, you know what, at the time we're gonna qualify. Like, you know what, fuck is we're gonna even play with Jorek, which is our coach at the time, like the good old Emulate player.
Yes,
I was like, we're gonna play with Jorek and we're gonna qualify. Like,
By the way, it's also worth saying back then it was actually way less treacherous to play online qualifiers. If you remember, like if you it's were a top team, now, yeah. you usually would qualify through these yes. to the major. It wasn't like now where some random team you never heard of knocked out and fall and then lose themselves. It was kind of like you're saying, even with four players, you'd walk to the tournament.
I was confident. I was confident we yes. would qualify. Maybe I was delusional, but I was confident with Jorek, and actually, as you know, we went into EACA finals with yes. Jorek, and we even won games there against yes. good teams. So I was positive we would qualify for the major with Jorek, and then the decision came that we were basically just even banned from even attending the qualifier, which was enraging, frustrating. But I also thought it's kind of a mixed bag of emotion that you have, because a part of you is thinking, oh shit, if he was cheating, and if that shit happened in official games in which you were playing.
Oh, did this actually make you maybe have some guilt yourself or some sort of a weird feeling? Right.
I was literally sitting next to him in the seat arrangement and I'm thinking, what, this happened next to me? Right. And I couldn't see that he had whatever technology of whatever, if it is like a 5% help or what. I don't know. I do not know the technicals. I've never known the technicals. Sure. But I was thinking, okay, we definitely don't have moral high ground here. Like,
all right.
We are in a bad spot. He's being guilty, but we are being given zero information. And that was a very frustrating event. That is true. And it was the beginning of a downward spiral for us. But I mean, we're going to talk about it later on. But I think when we picked up RPK, we still showed pretty good results, even though he was rusty as hell. Hadn't played for many years.
Yes. One last thing on the Kelly thing is just this. To be fair, I don't actually know if anyone does ever think about that thing anymore. Obviously, they think about when I ask them, because I ask them, and then obviously I'm also the sort of person who just always asks the things I'm interested in, whether it's in a green room or in after party. So I have asked a million times Apex, you, fucking Existence, NBK, almost everyone who's in that team, Kenny, everyone's in that team. I've asked them the story. What happened? What did he ever say anything? But the thing that really shocks me, this is what I want to ask you, is everyone's also told me that a really kind of disturbing aspect of it is, like you say, that people might know, apparently he gave one excuse, was he said something, he just installed it now or something, but that's about it. Aside from that, as far as I know, publicly or privately, Kelly has never attempted to actually address this situation
right.
and explain what he really did. And so the weirdest thing is, like, bearing in mind in that scenario, I don't know if he understood this, but if you get that VAC ban, you're never getting unbanned from that. You are just banned from, that's the end of your professional career. So what I never understood was this. I always thought, even if it's just in private, not public, at least with people like you and Apex, you've been with this guy for a while. You've been through it all. You've been trying to win majors together. I thought you'd at least sort of like, you know, in some context say, all right, I did it, but I did it for this reason. But I've heard none of you ever get to know. So it'll always just be a what if. If you think on that part of your career, it sounds like it kind of tainted a bit for you. It sounded like even when you were talking about that major run, you couldn't really sort of feel the same emotion you had at the time, because part of you thinks, what if this guy did do the jumping shot against VP? What if you cheated then, right?
You're correct. And it is a fact. We have never spoken after that. I have never spoken to him. He's never spoken to me. I've never known his official version. And I actually would have preferred if he had actually told me, yeah, nice. I cheated at this event, that's what I did. And at least I would know.
Yes.
At least I would know. We've never talked. And it took me quite a few years, I think, to, as I said, to come to peace with the fact that I would never know. And that it would be an unhealthy sort of line of thinking to say, okay, but what did I deserve? What did I earn? What isn't worthy at all? I would rather much think about what did I do in these scenarios? What did I do to go through all of these games and whatever results we've done? And that's it. That I can keep to myself, that nobody can take that away from me. But it is, if someone ever questions some of the results or trophies that we've had and uses the Kelly angle, I have nothing I can say against it. I can literally not say anything. I cannot, there's no rebuttal for me because I don't know. And he's never told us, and Valve never told us either. I don't even know if they have the technical possibility to say, okay, this was detected here and here and here or not, or if it's just a snapshot in time with no consideration for the past. It will always be unknown. And he has never said anything about it, never reached out, never talked about it. And it took me quite a while to accept that there's going to be no closure. No, at least not in sense of the healthy sense of closure now. Now you yes. know you can move on. That just would never happen. But you also made a pretty good point. When it comes to like, you know, it's not like he was playing next to me with invisible walls and he would just tell me, oh, they're going 3B. Some context to that as well, and as we've already covered, I come from the deepest Counter-Strike version there is, right? I played Counter-Strike the first time 24 years ago. My notion of cheating at the time is wall hack, speed right. hack, and aimbot.
Oh, sure, yes.
There are three different cheats at the time. You can either run really fast, you can see through the wall, or you can shoot everybody in the face all the time, which people would do in FFA or whatever mod sure. servers would be. This is my version of cheating. So when someone tells me that, no, there are actually sort of engineered, tailored ways you can have, where you have like a slight yes. edge or you cross it just a little, I'm outmatched. Yes. Like I'm outclassed by whatever technical.
If people don't know, what Maniac's also describing is, at the time this VAC wave happened, we also found out, fully enough, from a guy who's SNM, that German guy who cheated, he basically revealed some of these modern cheats. And at the time, like yeah. I was saying, it was levels above anyone thought. Like,
absolutely.
Like, for example, famously, one that you just said there that was a genius one, was this one that was like 5% better. So the idea was, it wasn't like an aimbot, but it was like, if you got it really, think about, here's the best example. You know, in certain tools like Photoshop and stuff, you can sometimes set it so that when like a line's like that, if it's got a straight line to it, it'll snap it to a straight line, would it? Mm-hmm. It was more like that. It's like if you went close to the head, it would just sort of snap on, but only a tiny bit, so it could look like a correction or something. So the point is, they were almost tailored to be like, unless you're the guy doing it, you don't really know if someone yeah. did it unless you could detect it. Like, actually, I think the joke is, even if you had watched behind, you probably would just think he's having an awesome game. I don't think you'd actually even know he was cheating unless you could see what key he's pressing or something, right?
I mean, you're right. My honest reactions, I mean, there were a few shots which got me like, what the fuck is going on? But I just assumed, okay, there are people who can do things I can't.
You like, were yeah, playing yeah. in a team with Kenny S, to be fair, as well. Exactly. So like, you've seen like, that shit, right? Yeah.
I'm playing with Kenny S. We have Scream in the scene, yes. right? We have people who can do things yes. that pretty much nobody else can. So when I see Kenny hitting some of these shots, I'm like, okay, well, he's just, he can do it.
Yes.
Like, good for you, bro. And you're on my team. I'm happy. This is a win-win. And then, yeah, of course, if someone tells me then, well, actually, there was this whatever tool that, oh, man, I am not even angry at myself for not seeing it, because I could not have seen it. Yes. Like, I rethink about these games, I could not have seen it. I just, or maybe it's because of my past and for how long I've been in the game and I was too naive or candid about it. If I were to now revisit all the demos, maybe I would have a different view. But at the time, I have no regret. I couldn't see it. I never saw it, actually.
So after this, as you said, even though when the team took Yorick, who was used to be an old 1.6 player and played in early, he was actually in like the Climbers team field, he played in early CSGO, what people won't know is they went, you guys took them to ESEA LAN, and basically because there's no Kaylee, now Kenny S had to go even more ham, but he actually was fucking bonkers at that LAN. But if you saw how Kenny S played, because you're using a standard who's the manager, actually I remember thinking, bro, all they need's like just a player basically. They just need like a pro level player. So here's what's sad. When the story came, it's okay, they've basically done the joke. I already did it when he joined Titan, this literal cartoon of it, of like you go out to the chopper, you know, to the fucking cabin, if you remember that famous thing they made. Like the idea is, it almost was like Existence just went and got and was like, hey, RPK, you gotta come back, mate, we need you. Now here's the problem. I will frame this very carefully, because even though I wasn't from Source, RPK is a legend of Source. So it's the same way as if someone tells me in CSGO that at some point at the end Neo is shit, it's like, I'll agree with you, his performance is shit, but I'll never be able to say he's shit because I know Neo in 1.6. So similarly, I'm not going to disrespect RPK, but I will say this. The problem, I think, is this. When he came back, when a name like that comes out of nowhere, you probably have to give him a guy. In this scenario, as we say in English, beggars can't be choosers. You have to have someone. So he's a great guy to bring. And if you even think about the way, of a year later when he was with Shocks and he'd had his time on his feet, he became pretty good again. And you even think about his game, but the problem was, as far as I can tell, actually his game in CSGO had similarities to Source. He was a guy who like holds his spot, uses his brain, fills it. And so one of the problems was he'd been out of the scene, unironically, guys, for like 3 years at this point in time. 3 years he's been off, literally a mechanic under a fucking car doing things. Yep. Like, he's not playing CS, he's not grinding, he's not a guy secretly hoping he comes back. I actually think I got the vibe then, by the way. He had sort of gone. It's like, right, I'm done with my CS thing. So when he comes back, the problem is he was a liability to some degree. And I stood behind your teams. I've heard the comms. I've seen the depth. There were times where, for real, existence and other members of the team, it was like they were sort of having to sort of, I've often said, like, micro him, like, sort of tell him, sort of, like, come with us now, like, pass back on the, listen, old RPK, you never would have had to tell him any of that shit. Like, this guy felt the gear. Yeah. What were the struggles in this sense? Because as I say, on the one hand, if I took the nameplate off, he's maybe not playing great CS, but at the same time, it is what the most legendary player of like the French CS. So how do you handle this situation? It must be hard to integrate someone like that. And remember, it's not like you have a build-up time. This is CS. Like, the circuit just keeps going. You have to just jump in the next lands and start playing.
Yeah, there's a few things to consider here. The first one is, we were all, I think, in need, desperately in need to some positive vibes, and we were all chasing like competitions and results. We were all being left frustrated about the whole major situation, then having to play EACA with a coach. People are getting a little tired and exhausted from that energy that we're wasting. So we're all eager to have a lineup and start working. And when RPK joins, I think the first thing that we realize is he still got it with the mouse. Like, whenever someone is coming to him and he's in a decent position to take the fight, it's almost as if these 3 years of break that you were talking about never happened. Like, he has a skill consistency that is remarkable. And I think that's also why he was then able to go on with like G2 and Vitality and staying in the pro scene, because it almost felt like he never really left, just in terms of mechanics, because that is how reliable he can be on that.
Right.
But the problem is he was completely lost in terms of meta and protocols and principles in the game and comms and movements and rotations. He was really years behind it. That's actually literal. He was literally years behind. So the problem that we started having was that, just as like a systematically problematic family, we would have to devote so many resources to RPK being up to date with what he needs to do, was that we started stagnating in our playstyle, in our playbook. Because, and I say we, it was mainly Apex in existence, even though I did some of the bomb sites, but I wasn't really playing with him because he was the second anchor. So I was one anchor, he was the second one. We were really not interacting too much in on CD side. But Apex in existence spent hours and hours and hours with him talking like setups, and that's the strategy, and this is how you play that position, and these are the tricks that people use now, and these are the strategies that are going to be used against you. You have to be careful of this, of that, of this. They use a tremendous amount of energy, to the point where I think people got tired a little bit, and we stopped, as I say, we stopped improving and like thinking forward. Okay, how can we innovate? How can we get better at this and that? We were mostly trying to play catch up in order for him to be up to date with what's happening. But what's crazy is that even in under these circumstances, our first outings on LAN are pretty decent. Like, we literally do two grand finals where we lose to NIP, Pantamera, I can't remember if it's the finals or Fnatic, but we just
Nip was Assembly and Fnatic was Pantamera.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. So NIP, that's the tragic fucking Mike Lele defuse in front of existence where he could have actually gotten him. That is that moment, right? And then there's Pantamera where we lose to Fnatic, where I'm sick. I have like 41 Celsius fever. I'm almost like hallucinating. It's horrible, horrible conditions, at least for me on a personal level. But these two events are very decent in the context of where we are with the team and RPK coming back. So the results are decent. It's just that as the real competitions approach, you can feel that we're falling behind in terms of Counter-Strike and quality of Counter-Strike, and it's coming back to bite us.
Right. After this, with RPK, was when, now that the real lineup was set again, everyone saw that like Kenny S was probably the best player in the world. This is when all those famous things, Olaf Meister made that dope comment, even though they were actually thought to be the best team. What's funny is that people don't know, the analogy is a bit like when Simple went Goat Ward. Device and Astralis still giving up, even though they were beating him. So at the time, everyone was like, Kenny S is impossible, right? Here's the question I have for you, Maniac. One of the reasons why I am a bit shocked by how hard you go on the Ziwu angle is because you ain't played with Ziwu. You were there in the fucking practice server. You were there in the officials, mate. If people don't know at this time, Kenny S, even in online games, used to just carry every game. It was like the joke is, I used to say back then, he was so good, it made me even think, even though it's not like a super quality of his game, it even made me think he was like the best clutch player, because he never lost a clutch with the AWP either. It felt like he just like no-scoped someone or hit two really fast shots. Like, he really was in some insane peak. And obviously, this is pre-AWP nerf, right? I'm not asking on the Ziwu side. I understand that's your way of actually emphasizing how incredible you think he is that you played with. But what was Prime Kenny S like? Do you remember what it was like to play with him?
Yeah, absolutely. I do. Prime Kenny S was basically the cancellation of any physical boundaries to what you can do in the game.
Okay.
Like, that's what it is, right? Addison, you would watch Kenny's POV, and for as long as he had an AWP, any situation could go his way. Because he would bend the rules of like how acceptable a fast scope is, both in terms of speed and in terms of distance. So as a result, he would be able to sort of mechanically finesse his way out of situations which normal OPers should completely die. Like, you think about situations where someone closes a gap to you, or where a trade kit is coming, or a flash is coming. He was so fast and so precise that there was almost no situation he couldn't win. And on top of that, he was pretty decent with the pistols as well. So whenever he had to switch off of the AWP and bring out the gun or the pistol, he was very, very efficient with it as well. So he could literally just get a shot off, pop up the deagle, and then get that second kill, and then fast go behind it. So he had... I still think that he... I'm just trying to think if I'm not going to say something stupid. No, he is the most mechanically gifted player I've ever played with. That's easy to say. That I have played with, I don't think anybody has ever been mechanically more gifted than he is. And I'm using the term gifted here. It's a very specific word I'm using too, because although he was doing his basic sort of cardio work with the deathmatch and all, the Kenny's that I knew wasn't exactly a grinder in the sense of I'm going to go out there and I'm going to learn all the demos and all my opponents and I'm going to find out all these tricks and I'm going to be the best in the world. No, he was just insanely, insultingly good. Not with an incredible work ethic. He wasn't an incredible teammate to be with. He was a good person to be around. You would have good fun with him, but we've already covered like some of the rage and the frustration and the mistakes that he was doing at the time. So I think if you're really looking at the greatest of all time sort of category, I think there are a few boxes that he doesn't check. But what he was capable of doing mechanically was beyond anyone. And then you had to wait for Simple to come around a little bit later to find someone that can actually sort of hold a candle to him to what's possible of doing on the server. But yeah, that's what Kenny S was about. He was wonderful to watch. But I also think, I've always thought that the amazement that he would create in people watching him would sometimes mask some of the issues that would be in his game, some of the flaws that would be in his game. You would watch a game of Kenny S, and there would for sure be in almost every single map one, two, or three highlights that would get you to just like, oh, what the hell was that? What did I witness? And this would make you forget about, oh, I just died to a Tech Nine and I gave my AWP away, or I just peeked in that 4v3 and that was not necessary. I'm not saying that he was doing a million of these mistakes. That's not. But I'm saying that because he was so flashy and so impressive, people tended to forget about some of the mistakes that were going. So that's why when there's a comparison, Kenny S, they're not the same types of player for me. Not at all. But in terms of mechanics, yeah. I mean, I tweeted, when I saw Monesi come, I tweeted that this is the first guy that I've ever seen that is faster than Kenny S. And I thought this was an apt comment. I still stand by it.
Yes. Another thing I want to ask you, I actually hadn't thought of this even, but you really must have just felt like I'm fucking cursed or something, mate, because you had the day before where you get the calls, what's going on? Kaylee's banned from the game. Then you have the day when you've got Kenny S, who's the best player in the world. It's like you wake up one day, oh, Valve's just nerfed the AWP. It's like, bro, can I get a fucking break? Like, can I get a break with these fucking... Because the joke is, of all the teams, since at the time yours was a little underpowered, that was almost like a direct nerf to your team specifically.
I know. It was so... I mean, listen, I personally didn't live that too harshly because it wasn't my gameplay that was...
Oh, sure. Okay.
You know, like on an individual level, my game didn't really change.
Okay.
It was even the other way around. That's actually a moment where I personally have an uptick in my game because suddenly there's a little bit more space and things are getting a little better for me. But yeah, for Kenny, that was rough. And again, at the time, it's very easy to say I would have handled things differently if I was Kenyas. That's such a stupid ass statement to say. But it's not like he faced that situation head on, say, okay, you know what? I'm actually going to learn this new AWP and I'm going to work through this and it's going to be all right. I'm going to find solutions. It was a bit more like, oh, God damn it. Well, I guess it is what it is. And I'm just going to be a bit worse now. And that's it. But obviously, yes, for him, that was a big hit. What was it like? Beginning of 2015?
No, it was like the day before April Fool's, believe it or not. It was like the 31st of March or something. That's why when it dropped, I actually thought, exactly. Was this an April Fool's joke? Like, that would be a great joke if for one day you like nerfed it and brought it back. And then the joke is they never brought it back. That was just it forever.
They never brought it back.
If anything, they nerfed it more now. So like,
That was really rough for him, for sure. Let's just say it didn't help knowing that we had already, obviously, all the sort of frustration at times with RPK that we have to kind of help keep up to date. And now KNES is being nerfed. It's like, oh, Jesus Christ. Come on, man, please. Can I have a good news?
Events come and go. Fame rises and then falls away. You have a job, you lose a job. You do one thing, you have to move on to another. But one of the cool things about my career is I have my own support network who's always got my back. So I always know I can rely on the support to do the work I want to do and talk the way I want to talk and not have to follow certain rules that others arbitrarily have to follow. And that support group is, of course, called the Skrilluminati, my Patreon community. This video and all the others on my channel was kindly supported by Matt Pugnacio Rakula, Frisky, Ahmed Haju, Tobias Bernasconi, Toucan, Tosh, Jensen Gore, Animosity, and you know it, always my main man Jerky's minion, rock it with me, ride or die. Would you like to suggest a topic or a guest for a future episode of Reflections or a talk show? Do you want teasers? Find out who the upcoming guests are. Maybe you want to ask me a question for my video AMA where I tend to go quite in depth, or perhaps you want to take part in one of those really long donated discussions where we talk about whatever you're into in esports. Well, if any of those perks or any of the others catch your fancy, join the Skrilluminati today via the Patreon link in the description box where? Down below.